see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Hello and welcome to Love to See It with Emma and Claire, a podcast about throwing shade and whacking off.
I'm sorry, Claire, bleeping off. There are some things you just cannot say on television. Have a little respect.
I'm so sorry. That was my bad. Let's regroup. Today, in fairness, we are going to be discussing the taboo, the edgy, the underbelly of the bright, shiny image we usually see on The Bachelorette as we get into the later stages of Katie Thurston's journey to find love.
And we're joined today by a first-time guest, but someone whose other work we have so long admired, Aubrey Gordon, also known as your fat friend. She's the co-host of the wellness podcast Maintenance Phase and the author of What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat. Thanks so much for joining us, Aubrey.
I'm so overjoyed to be here and to reveal myself as like a weird Bachelor superfan. I'm like just absolutely delighted to be here.
Look, we love when those come out of the woodwork. It's really beneficial to us. And we are obsessed with your other work. So this is just like a really exciting moment for us and for this show.
We
start strong, really.
Yeah. Caitlin and Tayshia are having a heart-to-heart with Katie, who's like, thank you, Tayshia, for introducing me to your ex, Blake. He is so great. I don't know why you threw him away like garbage. And then she's like, I also really like Greg and Michael A. and Andrew. So like basically the front runners that we all can kind of glean. And then she's like, I'm going to take a hard left turn here. Have you noticed that my men are so hot and sexy? They're probably working out right now, getting swole for me.
I feel like production was like, look, Katie, we're really bored. We just want an excuse to force Aaron into like a very tepid hot tub and have him like do a paradise intro. They were like, what a great idea. What if Katie just brings this up very naturally to Tayshia and Caitlin and they can all gab about it like gal pals do?
I also just appreciate that they're like, you know, because we're so sex positive starting 6 weeks ago. We have to talk about masturbation in depth and specifically about not doing it and not ever calling it masturbation. I was just like,
well, Aubrey, you understand the most sex positive thing is to focus on masturbation without ever naming it. It's like Voldemort.
If things are named, then they lose the erotic charge, right?
Exactly.
We need the taboo. Thank you to The Bachelorette for helping us maintain the sexiness of masturbation by never telling us what they're talking about. Katie's basically like, I'm so turned on by these guys, and I hope that I'm also turning them on, but just in case I'm not, Let's make that happen by preventing them from masturbating. She wants to ask all the guys to, quote, withhold their self-care as long as possible and, quote, no friendly handshakes with themselves.
It's really like we're injecting some like dominatrix vibes into this. We're injecting some Gavin McGinnis.
You come.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a nice crossover between the Proud Boys, Seinfeld, and like the kink community. Oh,
men going their own way. Like, ah! Yeah.
I think Katie seems genuinely into this, but I don't really understand what the expectation is that the guys will receive this with, like, if she's sitting there being like, oh, they're gonna be so turned on when I'm like, you can't come until I say, or is she just like personally enjoying flexing this power a little bit? I was like, why what's going on here?
It felt like it tracked with what I have observed Katie's type to be, which is like total goobers. And this felt like a real goober move. Do you know what I mean? Like, she seems to be approaching it as like a party game or something where she's like, this is going to be fun, right? Like, icebreaker, don't masturbate. Like, what?
I mean, when I go to a corporate retreat, I'm always like, look, guys, I just have a neat icebreaker idea, the whoa-whoa challenge. Just putting it out there. I want all of us to get very intimate.
It's just so... Also, she never says that she's going to do it. I was like, Katie, are you participating in the whoa-whoa challenge? Or...
I mean, it did not seem so. I didn't get that sense.
I was like, you got to put some skin in the game, you know, also, as it were.
It would be too sex positive to talk about a woman masturbating, right? Yes, like that would be don't. Like too. No, we can't do that. Right? Like this, a bridge.
Look,
too far,
Aubrey,
everybody.
We already know that Katie owned a vibrator once. What more do you want?
And held it up on TV. Great.
But Caitlin and Tayshia are thrilled by this
delighted.
Idea. They're like, this is brilliant. Caitlin immediately goes to tell the guys that she has a, quote, juicy secret for them, which is that she's inviting them into Operation Whoa Whoa, or Week Off Whack Off, I assume. It's bleeped. We don't know. But it sounds like they're saying Week Off Whack Off. The guys are all looking pretty horrified. Mike P is like, these guys are screwed. I've been mastering this my whole life, which raises the question, has Mike P ever masturbated? Is he not allowed to?
I'm concerned for him.
Does he have to wait until he's married?
I hope not. I really hope not for the sake of himself.
It felt like the weirdest flex to be like, this is my time to shine. Like, what?
He's like, no one is better at denying themselves pleasure than this guy.
And of course, that's exactly what Katie is looking for, is a guy who is capable of just happily living his life, not having sex for many, many years at a time.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way to try to find that like super sexual person she's looking for. But Mike P's reaction did very much remind me of my days in Catholic school and the sin of onanism and how deeply wrong that is if you spill your seed upon the ground and it does not impregnate a good Catholic woman to whom you are married.
I think we actually have a clip of all of the fun that Connor has with describing this challenge.
Perfect.
To the camera.
Caitlin tells us that we have all been invited into this pledge of no more onanation, as Mark Twain put it. No more downtown Lester Brown. No more low five. No more getting jiggy with it. No more letting your freak flag fly. No more Friday night lights, Saturday morning balloon races. No more feeding the wild stallion. No more how you like them apples. No more solo hockey. You know?
Oh my God.
I love that not one of those makes any sense.
It's zero.
Like,
zero.
Balloon races? What?
Never heard that one. I just find Connor to be so adorkable. I can't help it.
Oh my God, he is exactly adorkable. Like, I haven't used that word in years, but
he is the Zooey Deschanel of The Bachelorette.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, like, all of this was just like, I was like, this is all why he's so her type, or at least appeared to be. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But like, I was like, this is exactly right. You're the guy who dressed up as a cat. You're a guy who has a bajillion euphemisms that don't make any sense. You're like a young math teacher, but still somehow not the cool teacher. Like, you know, he's not the cool teacher. At his school, right? Like, he's like lovely. People, I'm sure people really like him. I'm sure his students adore him, but no one's like, what a cool guy. Like, I just don't think that's part of that guy's life at all. That was a moment where I was like, yes, Katie will be very into this. Like, the level that he is into this challenge and the level that she is into it is like the same.
I agree.
Seemed very perfect at the time.
Absolutely.
And then I was wrong.
Caitlin asks if anyone might have a problem with this. Like, does anyone tend to run the shower extra long, as it were? And everyone points to Blake, which, like, really raises the question, how much is Blake noticeably masturbating in the shared spaces? That they all have the same answer.
Also, I'm concerned for the environment. I thought he was a conservationist. Like, how much water is he using?
Yeah, you should be able to do it with one square of toilet paper. You know, like, or do it into the soil, like return it to the earth. There's got to be a more sustainable way to whack off.
I do like that Blake seems to have integrated well, though. The tension that we saw seems to have really dissipated. They're like, he's one of us. We can joke about his masturbation habits. Like, we're all good here.
Yeah. Also, truly wild that he's been there for 1 week, 2 weeks, and this is already the reputation that he has. Right? Like, yeah, immediately everyone's like, oh, new guy. Like, you're going to have a hard time with this one, new guy.
Like, that is they're impressive. Like, our shower access dropped precipitously. This house is very noticeable.
Totally.
So Caitlin also drops off a date card that says, Justin, I can picture a future with you. And this is when we get another beat in the is Hunter a villain plot. Hunter sort of turns to Greg after the date card is read and the group has dispersed. And he says, oh, I thought maybe you would get a second date. And Greg is like, oh, does that happen? I didn't know. I wasn't even thinking about that. I wasn't thinking about that. And Hunter's like, yeah, it does. Not often, but sometimes with guys who get the first date card. And then he says, I think Katie has already picked her top four. And you, Connor, and I are in it. I absolutely was dying with laughter at this point. Like, it's always, like, incredible to hear from the guys who can accurately diagnose who the actual front runners are. And then they're like, and also me. It's like, oh, your perception has failed you in one respect here.
I was delighted that someone was like stepping outside the show to do this kind of like gamesmanship, but like on camera, being like, oh, we all know how this is going to go.
Like, it was like, I know. And then of course it's like he broke a cardinal rule, which is that like, it is considered gauche to admit you have knowledge of the game of the show. Mm-hmm. You need to like have that knowledge, but you should like never admit to it. And right. This is where Hunter, you know, sort of screws himself.
Yeah, it's the whole right reasons like discourse as well, right? Which is
bullshit, of course. But
right, people who are there for the quote unquote wrong reasons are the people who understand that they're on television and that can like change their lives in some ways. Right? Like, it's very odd that there's this sort of like willful engagement with sort of the fantasy of the show and like desire to disregard that cameras are present and this is one of the most popular shows in the country. Like, what?
Yeah, I think this is more of a thing on The Bachelorette too, because I don't think that a lot of the guys do watch the show, whereas usually the women are pretty familiar with it. And so it is seen as suspicious when they have any knowledge of it, because it's like, why would you watch The Bachelorette unless
you're
want to be on television, right? Yeah, you're a man. Like, you shouldn't have this knowledge. But now it's time for Justin's date. And before we dig into it, this is probably the right time to mention something we just learned about last night, which is that some of his old tweets were resurfaced. And they are from about 10 years ago when he was a teenager, like 14 to 16. So a long time ago, and he was young, but some of them are pretty bad. They, you know, he uses some anti-gay slurs. There's some fat phobia. There's some comments about like dark skinned Black women that are quite, you know, colorist. He also went on Bachelor Happy Hour this week and apologized for them. I think he said, "I have no issue with owning up and apologizing from the bottom of my heart for the really hurtful words that I used." And he said, you know, basically there's no excuse, but I've grown a lot since then. It's always hard for me to know how to react when tweets from when someone was so young are brought up, especially when it was a fair amount of time ago. But I'm glad that he addressed
it. He addressed it. I think that's right. Like that's just addressing that stuff head on if and when it surfaces is the way to deal with it. And I'm glad to see that he did. And I would hope that, you know, what we see from him now does not express like any of the shitty views that he clearly held or bought into as a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a single teenage boy who does not have garbage politics, right? Like in my time, I have not known a single teenage like person of any gender, honestly, whose politics are like fully baked and that they would defend and stand by in their like 20s and 30s. So it does also feel to me like totally glad that he's owning up to it, totally glad that he's apologizing for it, and also maybe not the most like earth-shattering thing to be like, oh, a 15-year-old was like bad to people on the internet. Like that feels like what the internet is for on some level. Like, whoops, sorry, team.
And I think part of the problem is that it does end up tapping into these very real issues with Bachelor casting, for example, that they tend to often cast Black men who don't date Black women. Rachel Lindsay wrote about that in her recent essay. So like it taps into some of these really real issues with the show, and that makes it hard to kind of ignore, but it was so long ago, and I hope he really has grown since then. And we should talk about his actual date.
His date was I started to get real grumpy during this date for like a historical pattern of gripes that I have with the show, which is the
hate these dates. I hate them.
Okay, so wait. First, I want you to tell me what you hate about these dates, and then I will totally tell you what I hate about these dates. I'm guessing we will have overlap.
And we should say up front that what the date turns out to be is a wedding, fake wedding / wedding photo shoot.
I mean, first of all, this is essentially what they did with Tayshia and Zach. So, like, we've literally just seen this. Also, it's a shitty date. Like, there's nothing elucidated in this. There's, like, a weird thing of, like, maybe I'll freak this man out by forcing him to go through the ritual of, like, heterosexual marriage. Or, like, I will scare him into, like, confessing some sort of real deep feeling. I don't know. It's not a date. It's weird. It's weird. I hate it. I need it to stop. Rob Mills publicly did commit on Twitter last night. He said, okay, we hear you. A moratorium on on wedding photo shoot date.
Aubrey, what do you hate about them?
This season in particular has really shown the gaps between where the audience for the show is at and where the politics of the show itself are at. And this feels like some like 40 or 50 year old tropes about like men hate commitment. And they came on this show about getting married, and they're going to be surprised that like you're going to discuss getting married at any point, right? Where I'm like, well, no, like this is sort of a central conceit of the show. I assume that they sort of knew that when they signed up for it, even if they don't watch it, right? I have a real specific beef with this show and its use of like very queenie gay men as nameless props for like, it feels like something out of like an 80s or 90s rom-com where it's like a gay man just pops up and is like, I just care about your happiness. Here's a quippy one-liner. Bye. You don't need to know my name, right? Like, I don't have
Franco, Bachelor Nation photographer.
Totally. So it's Franco.
Which I only know because he's been on the show like 15 times now. And eventually.
He's clearly quarantined with them all the time, which is why we now like know his name. But yeah, he does sort of pop in to serve this like queer man realness. Like, I'm just going to photograph you and I just want you to fall in love. And I'm just here to serve you. And it's especially a weird contrast on a show that is like so virulently committed to like heterosexual partnership.
Yeah. It's like, right. This is what the role of a gay man is in the Bachelor ecosystem, in the Bachelor worldview, is like he can be there to like make your wedding day fabulous.
Totally. It's the like Martin Short wedding planner from Father of the Bride.
Oh my God. Yes.
It's like the Birdcage kind of vibes. It's like this very, very like decades in the past kind of expectations of like gay men that get set sort of through this show when they decide to include gay people. I will say I'm a queer person and I am never happier than when Bachelor Nation pretends like queer people don't exist, because I'm like, this is a mess that I don't need to be part of. That's fine. Go to town, team.
You're like, please exclude me from this narrative.
Totally. That's fine.
Back at the house, meanwhile, trouble's a brewing. Hunter's top four list is spreading. The word is spreading. And James, Aaron, and Brendan, whose hair, by the way, is climbing higher and higher.
It's very impressive.
Every time I see him. It's so vertical. They're all like, something's wrong. Hunter is a super fan. He was on the Bachelor forums. I don't trust this guy.
I was like, who talks about forums anymore? I'm like, do they just mean Reddit?
Guys, I was in this AOL chat room. And yeah,
exactly. I was like, what? He's like, I posted it on my MySpace. You guys can be my close friends. Like,
he's like, I run a GeoCities forum about The Bachelorette. I'm a mod. But the date is still going well. They read their vows to each other. I do want to read Katie's because I have thoughts. Katie says, Justin, I promise to love you every day. I promise to always chase you, to cherish you, to protect you from this moment on. You are the paint that colored my world. Our marriage is a canvas. So let's paint something beautiful. Two initial thoughts. The only thing she knows about Justin is that he paints. And yes. She uses the word paint twice in two sentences. Just a couple edits.
Yeah,
look, everyone needs an editor.
Yeah. It also wouldn't be The Bachelor without like a mildly to severely tortured metaphor. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's never not going to be a little sweaty on The Bachelor with the metaphors. Like,
well, I know. Justin seems blown away. He's like, you remember
yes.
that I paint.
I do paint. Oh my That's God. Me, Justin. I'm the one who paints.
He's like, this is so personal. Wow. We are married and ready.
I guess I'm just grateful that she didn't just say like, our journey together has finally culminated with us not only falling in love, but being in love. Okay, so she does the vows and then they give themselves permission to kiss and they do their little wedding shoot. They smash the cake on the faces. And that brings us to the end of the day.
So at this point, the date card arrived and it is a group date. Blake, Andrew, Michael A., Greg, Aaron, Mike P., Brendan, James, Trey, Hunter. The queen is looking for her king. Love, Katie. Which means that Connor is getting the one-on-one.
Connor has big, I can't remember his last name, Evan, who was on
Bass.
Bachelor in
Evan
Paris.
Bass.
Evan Bass, that's the one. He has kind of Evan Bass vibes, where he's like, again, like little, like very sincere, little bit of a goober, right? Kind of this like doofy dude. It's not going to go great. And as I thought about it, I was like, oh my gosh, I think this season is like, no Chads, all Evans. Or like at least that's who she tends to be sort of gravitating toward, right?
I think that's why I'm enjoying this season.
It's a very like oops, all Evans season. And I'm like, I'm kind of into it. I'm kind of into that she's just like, oh, is there drama around this person? You're out. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I don't actually care. I want you to be like kind of doofy and like painfully sincere.
She loves like a gentle, sweet guy who's a little doofy, but also we find that like there is a limit to how much deviation she wants to accept from like the Bachelor masculinity mold. And like she ultimately does, I think, seem to gravitate toward big himbo energy, like sweet and doofy, but also like huge and like big jaw. And like, yes, I'm describing Blake, but like she really yeah. is into Blake, just yeah, by the way.
She sure is.
But so meanwhile, Katie and Justin do have a dinner date. She is in a sequined blazer dress that our producer, Harry, points out is making a lot of noise on the mic. My air conditioner is loud, so I usually can't hear these kind of things. But she then takes this opportunity at dinner to talk some more about her father, or as it turns out, fathers. She says, you know, it was tough to walk down the aisle knowing that my dad has passed away and won't be able to walk me down the aisle or give his blessing. And also, he's not my biological father. My mom kept this a secret from me, but I recently learned that my biological father is someone else and that he's alive and he wants a relationship with me. But I don't know how to do that because I'm also mourning my father's death.
The Bachelor does this thing where sometimes they'll just sort of like drop traumas in for the purpose of audience bonding without any like real space for dialogue or without it feeling like this would have come up naturally. And that's what it sort of felt like here. And I don't know. I was just like, I really hope that this was something Katie had like come in knowing she wanted to talk about.
Yeah. All of my notes about this are in all caps. And I suspect that the total is like 72 question marks. Like, what? Why is this not like a 6-part Netflix documentary series? If we're doing this, let's like do this. Right. But yeah, it was one of those moments. And there are so many of these in Bachelor World where it's sort of like, oh, I hope you were in control of saying this. And I strongly suspect you weren't. And I wish that were different.
She's talked about her father passing away before in very intimate settings with guys that she is really into, and it hasn't seemingly come up. So the fact that it's now like dropped in this prime, like give us some trauma for TV sizzle moment, which is like the dinner date of a one-on-one, like it just feels a little hinky. Like, why is this happening now?
Yeah.
I hope that she wanted to talk about it and she wanted to talk about it with Justin. He reacts very sweetly. I don't think that they have quite the chemistry and like ease with each other that she has with a couple of the other guys, but it seems like it's going well. She offers him the rose. And then they go to a private concert with Max.
And Justin kisses her tenderly on the neck, which really seals the deal for him. He is now sort of moved into that like front runner group of men, although I would agree that he's kind of like towards the back of that cluster.
I always appreciate the musical performances on this show because it is an indicator to me of like how completely disconnected I am from every other sort of aspect of culture that people who are on this show are connected to, where they're like, oh my God, it's Max. And I'm like, I've never heard of this person before. I will never hear of them again. That's a thing about me, not about
this guy. Apparently, literally asked to be on the show because he had never seen an episode of the show in quarantine. He binged 23 seasons and then just like sent his demo to production. And they were like, sure. I was like, I kind of love that.
Katie was like, this is very sincere. And now I'm into you and you're on the show.
So they have this nice little interlude, and that brings their date to an end, and it's time for the group date. The guys are all meeting her on a dusty road, but they are all in their formal wear best, and Katie is dropping a lot of hints about, you know, I'm the queen, this is my castle. At the end of this, there's only room for one king. I want to say that in my notes, I never once wrote king. Wherever she said king, I just also wrote queen. So I was just like unintentionally, you know, sort of queering the Bachelorette here. I was like, I don't recognize kings on this show, but there's only room for one king. So Brendan's like, maybe it's something medieval. Like, you never know. But no, it's not medieval. It's drag queens. The guys' reactions to this, there are a couple reactions that I thought were amusingly contrasted. Michael's like, two beautiful drag queens come out. If it's drag day, I'm going all the way. Like, you can tell Michael's like, I'm ready to do drag for Katie. He's
I love so Michael wonderful. So much. I know.
Michael is built for paradise, I feel. Like, he just feels like he would be such a winner where you're like, that guy deserves a second shot. Here's his chance to get it, right? Like, he just feels
and then he
like
would, like,
he's
settle
primed
down with a nice girl and they would be the mom and dad of paradise.
A very Evan and Carly vibe. Until yeah, recently,
I would love like, that for him.
Totally. I will say my favorite reaction to this, and Claire, let me know if I'm stealing your thunder, is Blake.
Yes.
So Blake says, I had written down. I might have beefed this quote a little bit, but he says essentially like, I've never met drag queens. I've never been to a drag show, so I didn't know if I should be checking them out or not.
That is exactly what he said.
And I want an hour now of Blake explaining in his own words. I just want the producers to be like, stop right there. Tell me what you think happens at a drag show. Who do you think goes? What do you think the purpose of it is? Like, just tell me in your own words, because we would get a wild ride.
The two possibilities are everyone checks out the drag queens or no one
they
does.
Don't.
Those are the two things. I mean, I think it's it's like almost a telling comment about how we've used like just femininity. It's like, it's there to be ogled.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, is it still okay to do that if it's drag or is it mandatory?
Should I not?
Or is it actually mandatory to check them out?
I was like, oh, Blake, honey, we need to transfer you to a different show. You need some education. Like, he's good at reading books. We should send him some reading materials. Like,
totally. Somebody needs to take Blake to like a screening of Paris is Burning and just get baseline education going.
Have a cultural education for him. Yeah,
yeah, we'll send him a syllabus. Primer. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Right.
That's right.
So the drag queens are Shea Coulee and Monet Exchange. And Katie says, some shade will be thrown because nobody can find a fake like a drag queen. Also watching Katie, bless her heart, trying to do all of the like spilling tea and like throwing shade like lingo was like very uncomfortable for me. I was like, you're very white and straight. And
it's real wild. It's this thing like, so listen, I will say before I start on this particular topic, like this ship has sailed. Drag culture has been mined to death by like straight people and particularly straight white people who just fundamentally don't actually have any sort of grounding in drag culture or know what it means to throw shade, which is not actually just directly insulting people to their faces, right? Who don't actually know, right? Like, there's like this whole sort of cultural history that is sort of born of Black and Latino queer communities that has already been completely like rototilled by straight white culture at this point. And also, it feels very telling, once again, The Bachelor is doing it, and they're like, look how cheeky. And I'm like, again, I feel like this really sort of rose to prominence in a mainstream way, like 5 to 10 years ago.
Well, that's the exact timeline culturally that The Bachelor franchise is on.
That's right.
And that's generous, right. Really. That's
right. Yeah, it's like when a neighborhood has like already been gentrified, and then they're like, round 3 of gentrification, there's an Apple store here now. And you're like, that's The Bachelor.
Yeah. It reminds me of when I get into a new fashion item and I'm like, I'm so up to date. I wonder if it's been like written about anywhere. And I Google and find articles from like 4 years ago that are like visors, the new summer trend. I'm like, oh, I'm actually 4 years late. And I thought that I was really ahead of the curve. That's The Bachelor. The guys cannot do even direct roasting of each other. They go like prepare some material. They come back.
I mean, there is a reason that Katie literally has to say to the camera, it's like a roast, like a comedy show, because nothing about what these men do signals comedy in any way.
She's so far from like explaining like even what drag shows would be that she's literally like, if you've ever seen a roast.
What a point of reference for this team. Like, hey guys, remember Dean Martin at the Friars Club? Like, what? No, they don't.
They don't.
They don't.
And so they get started on their attempt to roast each other. I was really devastated that they did not have to do any drag, and maybe that was the first place that things went wrong.
I agree.
Are just in their suits on stage.
I mean, it's just a criminal underutilization of Shea Coulee and Monet Exchange. I'm like, really? You made them witness like Greg's poetry.
I just wrote in my notes, I have a bullet that says, Greg, colon, quote, I wrote a poem. And then in all caps, no, Greg. You missed the assignment, Greg.
That was not the assignment, Greg. No one asked for a poem, Greg.
That's like every other day on this show. Today is not the day for poems.
I mean, James goes first and he's like, I have a great roast. Just so you know, Katie, I have an amazingly big heart and life would be an adventure with me. He's like that. And then he looks at them. He's like, that was, I did it, right?
Yeah. Sick burn.
Yeah, it's subtle, but you know, you get it. Like, these guys suck.
I will say in their little like prep segment, they cut to Trey, who, by the way, Trey got a stellar edit on this episode. I was just like,
he did.
I love Trey. Like, Connor gets the one-on-one date, and Trey's like, I'm so happy for Connor. Like, I'm disappointed, but I'm so happy for Connor. What a great guy. And then they cut to him sort of during this date talking about what he wants to say about Hunter. And he says, if you combine a squirrel and an angry beaver, Hunter is what you get. And it's not a well-constructed joke. It's not, there's a lot of things that are missing from it. But what I loved about it is that I was like, oh, Trey's been thinking about this. Like,
Trey was at least trying to understand the assignment. Totally. You know, like,
which, and then we see none of this show up in the debate. So my question is, did he get all his lines cut or did he chicken out and not want to say any of the mean shit? Because it's like, here's James up here being like, my roast is that I'm an amazing person. And Greg literally reads a poem that's like, what we have is real. And Trey's like, oh, maybe not. Maybe I won't say the thing about how Hunter's a gremlin. I don't know, because the queens seem very disappointed by how serious and sincere all of their speeches are. They keep being like, we need more, like we need some tea, like what's going on? New tactic, who here is least compatible with Katie? And finally, Brendan is like, Hunter, I think Hunter is. Just going to say, it's cute that he has a top four list. It's funny because he's in my bottom four.
Brendan.
He should have hit that harder. That wouldn't have been so bad if he hit it harder. And then all the guys start being like, yeah, we heard about the top four list that Hunter has, too. And so then the queens ask Hunter, do you think you're number one for Katie? And he says, yes, I do. They ask how he's feeling about her. And he says he's falling in love with her. Absolutely. This is when Trey has, I think, one of his lower moments in the episode, which is that he decides to interrupt and say, when we were getting ready, I heard him getting asked this question and the answer was different. And Hunter says, it was a different question. And Trey's like, no, I was there. I heard it. I want to say, Hunter is right. It was a different question.
They
asked if he was in love. And he said no. And as any Bachelor viewer knows, and maybe Trey didn't do his research, falling in love and being in love, so different. It's like night and day.
Yeah. Well, and falling for someone comes before falling in love with them.
Exactly. We all know that there is a clear progression. And Hunter has just name-checked one stage in this journey, not the final destination.
Yeah. I'm not a big Hunter defender. I think he's like doing just fine in his sort of like casual villainous, right?
Yeah.
But also like, he 100% was like, I'm like, no, this is abiding by the rules of Bachelor where you go like, I'm falling for you. I'm falling in love with you. I am falling in love with you. Then has to be emphasized for some reason. And then like, I'm in love with you.
Exactly. And then, like, you know, Aubrey, you got it down.
I love how right you are about the I am falling in love with you thing, because what it is a tacit admission that before you were not.
Yeah, it's totally.
Like, but now I am, like actually this time.
Yeah, or it's as if someone's arguing with you, like some unseen off-screen person is like, no, you're not. And you're like, no, I am. Like,
I am. Okay. Hunter is like, I've been honest. Everyone can vouch for me, or people can. And they're like, who? And Mike P. and Andrew sort of are like, yeah, Hunter's an honest guy. But no one else raises their hand. Monet asks, who's the biggest tryhard? Everyone's like, Hunter. And Aaron says, Hunter is a leprechaun. Katie may have a heart of gold, but he can't add it to his pot. So I think some of them are bringing out their terrible lines now that the ball is rolling. But they're
like,
really
now
bad.
That everyone's being mean to Hunter, I can also make a joke about his height? Because I guess that's all they have.
The height and the tattoos.
The way he phrased that one was like, we all know you're a leprechaun. Like, we've all been talking and you are clearly like a mythical creature of some kind. What?
Stop trying to hide that you're a leprechaun, man. Everyone knows.
My other favorite thing about this is like during their little debrief with Katie and the two queens, one of the queens is like, Katie says, I was like really surprised that everybody seems to have a problem with Hunter. And one of the queens says, yeah, but it's all hearsay. And I was like, oh, are we in a court of law about like bachelorette dude drama now? Like, this is the greatest degree of like gravitas that has been brought to like, any of those sorts of conversations.
Innocent until proven guilty. Okay, that's right. Katie,
that's
the law in this.
Yeah. They do cue up Hunter to respond, I think we should say, to all of the assaults on his character. And he's like, I don't have any insults for you guys. And then he turns to Katie and is basically like, when I find the woman I want to spend my life with, I'll never take it for granted. And I think that woman is you. And Hunter's like, oh, he wanted to be the bigger man, but I think it's phony. I do not know if it's phony, but I do definitely know that he, again, did not understand the assignment. Not enough shade throwing, not even enough insults in this segment. Not enough drag. Highly disappointed.
Do better, do Bachelor. Better. And on that note, I think we should take a quick break. Can you keep up? I like, love it. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all, like, weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, there's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or reformer Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
And now we're back, just in time for Connor's date card to arrive.
Let's let our love shine bright. Love, Katie. Oh, everything's looking up for Connor. What could possibly go wrong? But first, we have a night portion, an after party for the drag debate. And Katie has this bee in her bonnet now about Hunter. I hope it doesn't ruin the evening. And James is the one who begins to cast a pall over the evening by telling her that Hunter is maybe similar to Thomas, calculated, the things he's saying aren't consistent, and then more and more guys are coming to her with similar comments. Trey, again, brings up the conflicting comments about falling in love with her. And he says he thinks that was calculated to advance his relationship. And Katie's like, okay, now I have a plurality of guys coming to me with these concerns. Like, how many accusations can I ignore? Have we passed that threshold? And so I have to ask Hunter about it.
She's like, the union is organizing again. They have found a new target. I just will say that the numbers of the unit are really dwindling, and I'm not sure this is how unions are supposed to work. Just throwing people out of the unit constantly.
I was going to say, like, I feel like unions not usually about voting out their own members.
But wouldn't it be more fun? It would be a lot more fun if they were. Keep things spicy.
You know? Unions meet Survivor.
And so she sits down with Hunter, and she's clearly just so exhausted at this point. She has two attempts at having a conversation with Hunter this episode where she, like, quote unquote, figures out what's going on, where she doesn't even know what to ask. And she doesn't know how to respond to what he says because she has no real basis to make an evidentiary based decision. And so she just sits down and is like, I heard this stuff. That really sucks for me. I don't like to hear it. And he's like, yeah, I don't like that either. I don't think it's true. I'm sorry. She's like, well, I don't know. And then she goes and throws up. So that's kind of where she's at with all of the detective work she's been asked to do.
It's really interesting. She sort of set the table in this way that's very, for herself, that is very different than past Bachelor leads, which is like, I want you to tell me about drama. And then sort of sets this precedent for herself that she will sort of functionally, that she will kick off people who are at the center of a bunch of drama, which is a very different approach that, like, I'm struggling to remember any other seasons where that has been, like, so intentionally and sort of clearly laid out by a lead.
It hasn't. And I think that, like, this season is evidence of, like, why that's not necessarily the best tactic. Because then, like, every time the men just continuously are like, well, we need to spend our time reporting on these other dudes that we don't like and getting them kicked out. And it's like, it's just taking up, it's sucking all the air out of the room. And I think that we see here that she's like, okay, we're past the drama half of my season. I'm ready to get into the love portion. And, like, I'm fucking tired of this. But she's asked them to do it. So she has to sort of go through the whole motions of it.
And so she's made so ill by this that she decides to call the night. Not all the guys got time. No one gets a rose. And she says, quote, tonight was a mix of emotions. And the guys are like, this is devastating seeing our girl like this. Hope she feels better. To which all I can say is, stop going to her and being like, that one guy said something that vaguely might be a little bit concerning. Devote your time to addressing this now instead of making out with Blake. That's not going to help her feel better. Okay.
Yeah, it's probably like 5 a.m. and she's like, I don't want to fucking talk about Hunter anymore. I'm so tired. I guess my body needs to like physically end this date for me.
I think there's this like, I would imagine like a sort of immense buildup of just like nervous energy all the time from being on camera all the time and not knowing how you're going to be edited and not really mm-hmm. knowing how to navigate these situations with a bunch of people who you've truly just met. That to me read like it was less about Hunter and more about this just like buildup of like nonsense of sort of having to navigate all of this all the time.
She's just fucking exhausted. Yeah. And like
she's been drinking
just
like straight whiskey and tequila and stressing for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So she hopefully gets a little bit of time to rest before her next date, which is with Connor B. He is dressed for the day in bright pink shorts and a navy polo with some piping around the collar. Polos, I have to say, do keep him from showing off his usual amount of chest. And maybe that's why he wasn't at his full powers.
Luckily, Katie is there, though, to meet the challenge. She's like, Connor has only a couple of buttons unbuttoned. So I'm going to show up in an outfit with all the buttons unbuttoned. It's about balance.
Yes, Katie meets him in a bikini and denim shorts and a open cardigan. And she's like, I remember seeing Connor in that cat suit night one and thinking he was the one. This is the least bachelorette-like thing that it's so profoundly different from how any other bachelorette in the past would have received this. And that's what makes Katie so special. But shocking news, they're missing the physical connection. When they kiss, she doesn't feel the spark. And this is their last chance date to get that spark going. So naturally what she did is she arranged a double date with her two buddies to serve as a buffer between her and the guy she doesn't really want to kiss.
Also, someone pointed out that Katie got sent home by Matt after being on a date with his friend.
Oh my God, yeah. Uh-huh. Probably for a similar reason.
Yeah.
So she's on a date with Caitlin and Caitlin's fiance, Jason Tardik.
I did enjoy seeing Jason back on my screen. I was like, that guy, yeah. I always liked him.
I had a similar reaction. I was just like, what an affable guy. And he was just like, Connor seems great.
I hope they get married.
I saw him tweeting and he was like, Connor, we got to grab drinks in Nashville. Let's hang out. I'm like, oh, sweet Jason. Aww. He made a friend.
I have to imagine that's like, I don't follow Jason on Twitter. I feel like maybe I should, but I imagine him doing that a fair amount on Twitter, being like, I'm gonna make social plans on Twitter. Like, he just seems like that kind of guy where he's like, let's hang out. We never hang out anymore. Like, great.
That's so true.
Just like a big yellow lab of a guy. Like, yes. Hey, hi. Yeah.
I love Jason. And Caitlin says, you know, maybe I can help with this because Jason and I had a friendship bond first before we fell in love and we have a really good relationship. And Katie, you know, also needs to find that spark with a guy who she has more of a friendship vibe with. And I'm like, Caitlin, is this how you fell in love with Jason? That you just like hung out with him around a couple friends so that he would not get too close to you. And then at the end, you did one kiss to see if it was there. I doubt it. But in the meantime, they're going to have like a little cookout field day. They're playing beach volleyball and some other games. There's Jason and Connor grill together while Caitlin and Katie make margaritas. And Connor shows off his dad jokes for them. They ask him to make a joke about sushi, and he says, I could, but it would be a little fishy. It's like you get that from a joke book.
And once again, Jason is like, that was so quick. That was a good one.
Jason is so a positive. great hype man.
He's so fantastic. I just was like, I would love it if they brought Jason back again this season because I was like, this is such lovely.
I know. Well, now that we know Caitlin and Tayshia are hosting Michelle's season, I really do hope that Jason makes an appearance during her season as well. Because Absolutely. More Jason, please.
They're all building up through this to the last chance smooch. Katie's like, I'm going to kiss him one more time just to see if it's there.
Poor Connor has no idea. He's like, this is going great.
It's going great. She wanted
he has no idea he's about to be tested. Like, that's a lot of pressure on one kiss.
Yeah. And he's like so chill. He's like playing volleyball terribly. He's calling her babe as he prepares her hot dog. Like, he's like, I'm the boyfriend. Like, this is great. And so they sit down on a bench to catch up, and Jason and Caitlin are watching from afar. This gives the whole thing sort of like an antic comedy vibe that I don't think would be there if they had had real spark they were about to make out. Like, the whole setup is very like humorous and not sexy. And so Connor asks, what will we be doing tonight? And Katie says, it's all to be determined, really. Which is like incredibly foreboding. He really takes it in stride. But like, how do you not hear like there might not be one?
Yeah, he has a very Jason response to that, which is like, sounds good. Like, this is going to be great. Like, oh, sweetie. Maybe
he's like,
not.
So you want to pick the restaurant? That's cool. Like, just tell me where to show up. I'm flexible. I'm cool. Yeah. And he's like, you make me so comfortable. All my insecurities and doubts just vanish around you. And Katie's clearly just thinking like, if this kiss isn't perfect, you're gone in 15 minutes. And so finally they kiss and we cut to commercial break. Did Katie
but we
get
just know.
What she needed? No, definitely
we
not.
Know it's not going to go well.
If you have that, they've kissed a lot. If you have that many kisses with a guy, the odds that, like, just the next one is suddenly going to be completely different and better than the previous ones is unlikely. Like, I'm not really seeing it happen.
Right. Connor is just, like, the guy that Katie's like, I should be into him. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy him. But, like, I don't really want him to touch me that much. And that's a prerequisite for a long-term relationship.
Yeah,
that is sexual. Like, yeah. it's not going to happen. So that night we see Connor just like getting ready and he's so excited. Again, they love to do this like overemphasis on the positivity of the person about to be brutally dumped. And Katie is just like in a hoodie and jeans.
Crying.
Yeah.
This is not going to go well.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough. Like, before it even started, you were like, this is going to be a tough one.
No.
Yeah.
He's like, there's no stopping us. We're perfect. And then, you know, the knock comes on the door. Katie has come to see him. And he opens the door. She's in her sweatshirt. And he's got to know at exactly that moment that there
he
is
knows.
Going to, that he's going home. And so he invites her in. She keeps apologizing. She's teary. She's hugging him. They sit down and she says, you know, the more I learn about you, the more I realize how great of a man you are. The song you wrote meant the world to me. And then she sort of breaks down, says, I can't even look at you right now. And this is when Connor says, it's okay. I know where this is going. It's okay. Breathe. And I started weeping because I was like, that is just such a kind thing to do in this moment.
Like, you have no obligation to be generous when someone is breaking up with you. Like, that's a very painful experience to be on the receiving end of. And I was just like, Jesus, Connor is such a like thoughtful guy. Like, what a fucking mensch, even in that moment. And Katie later says this, like, he really is like, okay, we're going to get through this together. Like, this is a shitty thing. We're going to walk through together and you just need to get through it. So like, I'm going to be okay. Like, he reassures her.
It felt like this is a situation Connor has been in before.
I said that to Claire last night.
I was like, that's a heartbreaker. Sucks. I also think like I had sort of a mixed response to him comforting her. Both it was very generous and also like I think had this been a season on The Bachelor instead of The Bachelorette and that was happening, I think folks would have a very strong negative response, right? That is this sort of like role reversal thing happening where like the person who's doing the dumping on national television is getting comforted feels like it's both lovely of him and
I thought it
like,
was lovely of him.
Yeah.
I was a little bothered that Katie, I think, often frames things in this way and allows herself to be the comforted one even when she is dumping, that she will say, like, this is very hard for me. Like, it's hard for me because I really liked you. And obviously, I think, you know, the dynamic reads differently when it's a woman, because I think we are so used to men's feelings being totally centered. But at the same time, I'm like, Katie, you are dumping him, and then you're going to go date the guys you like kissing more. Can you not start every sentence with, it's hard for me? And that was rough.
Yeah, I agree. I felt that this, it sort of bothered me. Like, I was, like, in awe of Connor, just in the way of, like, I have never acted so generously when I've been broken up with. But also, like, if there's any moment for Connor's feelings to be centered, it should be this one. And, like, I don't know. I was glad to see that he ultimately got some of that comforting from the other men, because he did not really get that from Katie.
This is back to the, like, oops, all Evans season, right? Where, like, all the dudes are like, what, Connor? And they, like, have this, like, incredible sort of bonding moment thing happen that I don't know that
I've
seen.
Yeah, he goes back. He goes back to the main house, which, like, they usually wouldn't get to do when they're sent home on a one-on-one. But he goes back and he's all teary. And the guys just look absolutely fucking stricken when he says he's going home. And, of course, Connor is, like, like, Michael A. gives him, like, a tender kiss on the cheek. They're
the
all,
second tenderest kiss of the entire episode.
They're all hugging. Like, Trey starts just openly weeping. Aaron says, Connor, I want to be more like you. Like, it is a really beautiful moment. Connor, as he's leaving, is like, there's no one better for Katie than all of you. Like, you guys are such good dudes. Like, it... God, I just, I'm such a sucker. I'm such a sucker for friendship.
Yeah. And I also want to talk about something that Katie said to Connor during the breakup that we haven't said yet, which is,
oh yeah,
she's like, you're so great. I thought it was you at the beginning. I wanted to feel like I could walk away from this with you. But when we kiss, there's something missing. I was so torn about this. Like, the honesty, I think, is there's something healthy and admirable about it. But I think that is, like, that would be so hard to metabolize. And Connor, in his In the Moment, references the two really painful parts of this, which are, it's so heartbreaking to start off that strong and then to kind of lose it. Like, how did you perform so badly, right, that you lost her attraction to you? And also, he says, God, how bad a kisser am I?
Connor.
I was like, Katie, why, like, some, maybe honesty isn't the best policy. Like, all he's going to be thinking about, he's going to have a complex about his kissing now. Yeah. That poor guy. And it's probably just your chemistry. And I think she knows that. But, like, how could he not internalize that as, like, I suck at kissing?
I could just assume and hope for him that his inbox is just flooded with DMs from eligible ladies wanting to see him in a cat suit.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the other thing that I sort of, like, thought about while I was watching this is, like, part of The Bachelor is this kind of, like, post-mortem thing that we're doing of, like, here are all the moving parts and here's how it all happened. And I absolutely had this moment last night where, like, I totally had a breakup that was, like, not dissimilar from this at one point. And I'm like, man, oh man, I sure am glad that was not recorded and televised, right?
Like, yes. So I'm just, oh, like, my God.
I'm both, like... you know, sort of pulling this apart as, like, media representation, right? And what sort of what messages it's sending. And also, like, there but for the grace of God go on. Like,
yeah.
There is not a single breakup that I've had that I'm like, yeah, no, put that one on TV.
Like, yeah, no, I think maybe great. The one where I was like, I'm not leaving this dorm room until you discuss this with me for 3 more hours. That one I definitely want to be televised.
There you go.
That was a real proud moment for me. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the last few bits of the episode. Can you keep up? I like
love it. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just, like, dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate, like, what's the correct amount of social energy? What kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize? What space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge? Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/love to see it today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/love to see it.
One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited-time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Here we are, back in her suite. Katie is crying. Connor checked off all her boxes, except for this one thing that they can't control.
Except for the most important box,
the most important box. But speaking of boxes of all varieties, what's that sound outside her window? Is it music? Is it a boombox being held up by Blake playing their special song, Memorize You by Lane Hardy? Poor Blake was like, I have a song in mind for this. And they were like, you're going to play Memorize You by Lane Hardy. And that's simply the final word on the matter.
They're like, this is the only song that we actually have the rights to. So if you could just replay that Lane Hardy song, that would be great.
I definitely went into like production mode and I was like, okay, so there's like a more than 20% chance that Blake is just holding up a boombox and nothing is playing and they're editing it in later.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Katie has to be like, what's that sound?
What's that? Like, is that Blake?
Hark, what do I hear? Right? Like, it was like very funny to me.
Part of me was like, I wonder if they played a different song and then they were like, we have to change it to Lane Hardy, but that might be overthinking it. So she invites him up. They meet in the hallway. He immediately just like pins her against the wall and starts making out with her. And he's like, I wanted to cheer you up. Like, I heard what Connor said about how you were in your sweats and crying. And all I wanted to do is like be able to turn your mood around. And that's what I did. And I'm so pleased about it. And Katie's into it. She's like, he's so romantic. She's like, I'm in trouble.
Can we talk about the fact that she like apologizes for not looking cuter and Blake is like, you look great. I like raw.
He's like, I told you I like it raw.
Like, what?
Like, I bet you did, Blake.
I'm like, is that how we would describe
raw,
a woman in casual wear?
Like,
right, Blake.
That woman is so raw.
I've been to Africa and I like raw women. Like, what are you doing, Blake? What is any of this?
You know, most of the night there's just more making out. It actually felt like weirdly very intimate, like passionately making out. And meanwhile, kind of murmuring things to each other, like in the tone of like dirty talk, like during foreplay. And they're saying things like, it was smart of you to come get more time with me. And like, you came and like made this happen. And then he's like, yeah, I did. But they're like, yeah, I did. I did do that. I did do that. Let me devour your mouth again. I was like, I don't feel like I should be watching this. This is like,
there was sort of that like grossness that you only really get when you are first dating someone and you're genuinely really into them. And it's like, it doesn't play well on television, but watching it, I was like, oh, she's just like really, really fucking into this guy. And this made me feel like Blake is just really performing the best out of anyone there at this point, like even better than Greg. But I was saying to you, Claire, like last night, like this is the one place where Blake's sort of like intense overconfidence in a relationship is warranted and like really works. Cause he tried it with Claire and Tayshia and like it did not work. But with Katie, it's there.
And Blake says, you know, I feel like Katie's going to be my fiance. And then there's an incredibly Frankenbitten quote pieced together from like a patchwork quilt. With Katie, I'm not going to hold back in any way. I feel like I'm in my own love story. Now I'm just ready to enjoy my happy ending. And intercut with Blake, like going to his room, putting up the do not disturb sign, and then a sprinkler popping up on the lawn. What do you think is going on here? The subtext is very...
It's subtle.
They didn't have footage of like a train going into a tunnel. I'm just like, wow, team. Okay. Got it.
You know, look, when they just really commit to a bit, and I appreciate that about the editors. They were like, we got this one.
Yeah, this is in fact the whoa challenge week. Let's get that sprinkler in there.
And Blake just lost, if he hadn't already. So the next night, Katie's all dressed up for the cocktail party. But she's like impatient. She wants the night to be over. She's ready to move ahead and get all like the dicking around done with, basically. And meanwhile, a lot of the guys are like, we're finally going to get time to like progress our relationship with Katie. There's not going to be a cocktail party. It's pretty clear from the beginning of this scene. But Katie comes in herself to tell them that. She's like, thanks for being here. It's been a tough week. Time isn't going to make any difference anymore because I have some strong relationships already. And so I know what I want to do. The cocktail party is canceled. And the men all start either freaking out or being like, I'm one of the strong relationships. Like Greg is like, well, what can you do? She knows what she wants. And Trey is like, I need that time, man. I need it. I don't know what she's going to do if she doesn't get that time with me. And it's like, okay, yeah, you know what the situation is. When they unveil the roses on the platter, there are only six.
Four people are going home. I mean, five eliminations in one episode. That's a lot at this point. It's a bachelor bloodbath.
Yeah. There's always like a turning point episode, which is for me the point at which I really start committing the full cast's names to memory.
Exactly. Right?
Like, this is the point at which all the people whose names I have not yet fully, that I have to remind myself about, like all of those folks get eliminated. And now it's like, okay, horse
except
race for
Brendan. Except for Brendan. Which defies reason. Yes. I was like, who the fuck is that guy? But yeah, we go into this rose ceremony. And it seems like Katie's like, I know what I'm going to do.
And then immediately she's like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, she pulls this really bizarre move that I also think is like kind of cruel, where she holds a rose, calls a dude's name, and then is like, actually, no, I'm not going to give you this rose. Hunter, let's talk. Like she did this with Thomas.
I thought it was cruel even then. I didn't think Thomas done anything bad enough to merit it.
I agree. I hate this move. I think Katie thinks it's like, haha, gotcha, I'm a strong woman. And it like doesn't play well.
I think production's
very into it.
They were probably like, that was so cool when you did it with Thomas. Let's do it again with Hunter. But she didn't maybe want to humiliate Hunter the same way. So she's like, let's go talk. And she takes the rose with her outside, leaving all the men to be like, so is Hunter getting a rose? And then she sits down with Hunter and is like, anyway, about our conversation the other day, I still don't know what to think. And he's like, well, I really like you. Like, the guys
said some things, but the truth is that I'm genuinely really into you and it's all been real. And Katie's like, I don't know. I just wanted to talk to you. But yeah, I don't know. Which, like, again, she had no, like, plan coming into this. I feel like she didn't know what needed to be said or what she would have accepted from him, if anything. She didn't have
there
any specific
questions. There was no purpose
questions.
To this conversation. And frankly, like, there was no reason for it to happen.
Yeah. And so Hunter returns roseless. She doesn't send him home at this point, but she doesn't give him the rose. Katie says, you know, I just needed some clarity, which, by the way, she did not get in any way that we can see. And she begins handing out the roses to Blake, Andrew, Greg, Michael A., Mike P., and Brendan, which means going home are Hunter, James, Trey, and Aaron.
Basically anyone that ever narked.
In that way, it feels like very, like, so Katie's season and Katie's approach is super different than a lot of, like, leads on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, which is just, like, any whiff of drama and you're out. But in this way, she's, like, very true to form, which is, like, but also the person who sort of, like, brings it to my attention is also out.
Yeah, you'll last for a while, but eventually, like every season, if you involve yourself in too much narking, like, you will ultimately
frankly,
go home.
Frankly, I don't want Aaron and Trey coming to me and being like, Blake is a shady dude. Like, I don't want to deal with that.
Well, and also, like, it does set up, like, a really weird dynamic, which is, like, if you carry that logic to its sort of conclusion, to its natural conclusion, it just means all you have to do is, like, rat out or kind of shit talk other dudes on the show, and then you make it to hometowns, and then you make it to the final, right? Like, if you sort of tease that all the way out, like, that's how that would go. So I also, like, I can sort of understand it and, like, meh. I also feel, like, personally a little salty because I really enjoyed Trey.
I love Trey. And also, we didn't need Brendan. Like, Brendan doesn't even belong in this group. I'm like, why?
I think Trey knows what he did, basically.
He does.
He does. He's like, I made some mistakes getting involved in the drama. Like, I was just trying to help and do what she asked. But in retrospect, maybe I should have used, like, any of my time with her to build our actual knowledge base about each other or to develop a rapport instead of using it to snitch on the other guys, even though I thought that's what she wanted. Like, maybe I should have taken another route.
He has such a sweet exit when he says, like, Mom and Dad, I'm the same kid you raised. I grew a little bit, got hurt. It's been a meaningful journey. I was like, oh, Trey, I love you. I love your animal print blazer. It's
just like, what, cheetah
A plus
print?
All around. It's, yeah. They toast and Katie says, I see something in all of you, but it's only going to get harder. And I'm just like, Katie, you don't see anything in Brendan, but you had to keep one more person around.
She sees something on him, which is his hair.
His hair.
Which is like a little flag that's like, notice me, pick me. I think that's what happened here.
A whole lot was made this episode about Hunter's top four list. We're now down to, are we down to six? How many dudes do we have left?
Seven.
So I'm curious about, for you two, do you have any gimmies for your, like, not, you don't have to do the full top four, but I'm like, who do you think is going to
hometowns? I actually feel, like, fairly certain about what's going to happen. I think that she's going to next eliminate, like, Brendan, duh, and Mike. And then I think that Michael is going to self-eliminate because we saw some of the stuff teased where, like, clearly someone leaves and his kid is, like, literally telling him, like, I don't think daddy wants to see me. And I just think, like, Michael's going to fall apart and be like, this is too much. I got to go home to my child.
I have to say, if my son told me on a phone call that he didn't think I wanted to see him, I would be gone in like an hour and a half. I would be like, just enough time to pack my bag and let them know where I'm going and get my passport back. And, like, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the other one that feels like a gimme to me is, like, Blake's definitely making it two hometowns. If there are no big bombshells at hometowns, then he's final two, as far as I can tell.
Oh, definitely final two.
Yeah.
We'll just have to watch and see.
I know.
Delightful.
Can you keep up? I like, love it.
And now it's time for Love to See It, Hate to See It. First, for Love to See It, One of our top moments this episode was Michael A's just sheer, pure enthusiasm for the drag date, his desire to just go all the way. I wish that we had seen that carried through. I wish these guys had been pushed a little bit more past their comfort zone. But just that moment of joy and happiness for Michael A was wonderful.
We also really loved in the credit sequence when we got a little clip of Katie and Shea Coulee and Monet Exchange, you know, just having some tequila, some tea. And they really are well-versed in Bachelor Nation lore because they bring up Stagecoach as a prime place to hook up with Bachelor Nation men. And I just really appreciated that commitment to detail.
Me too. And finally, for love to see it, the friendships. I mean, the men supporting each other during Connor's untimely exit. There's so much just physical affection, emotion, the tears, the kisses. There's just something so beautiful about the comfort with showing emotion and affection towards your friends that we don't see enough between men in pop culture, and especially on this show. And it made us so happy.
We truly love to see it. And now for Hate to See It. First, we just want to flag like the eagerness in perhaps the past two episodes to trash Hunter's looks and his height. Like Aaron said, he looked like a guy from a circus. Hunter's height is mocked multiple times. Trey calls him an angry beaver. We just don't love it.
And we just want to thank our astute listener, Elon, who wrote to us about this, calling out this trend in the last couple episodes. And we forgot to mention last week the way that Aaron called Hunter a guy from a circus, but it was pretty gross. So thank you for calling that out. And lastly, hate to see Katie's millionth exhausted attempt to investigate some vague bullshit accusations brought to her by the men. Just let this woman rest. She wants to hang up her gun in bed. She wants to retire so she can learn watercolors or read a stack of romance novels. Let her have this.
Just retire, the right reasons, bullshit forever. We all are tired. We are all Katie's. Just let us live.
And now the sex positivity rating for this episode. I mean, this was
a questionable one.
I don't even know what the masturbation thing merits.
Because they didn't actually say masturbate.
First of all, yeah, they're very uncomfortable about actually saying what they're talking about, except through heavy euphemism and giggling, which betrays a lot of, shame or discomfort still hanging around the concept. I also don't super love the light coercion element of springing this on all of the guys who did not ask to participate in some sort of dom sub dynamic per se. At the same time, this is the most I've seen masturbation discussed on a primetime show in quite a while.
I mean, everyone does it. It's totally normal. So yeah, that part we're down with. So I guess we'll call this a 6.57.
Yeah, let's call it a 6.5. And that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire. Thanks to our guest, Aubrey Gordon. Check out her book, What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat, and follow her wonderful podcast, Maintenance Phase, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Harry Huggins. This week, we're saying goodbye to our longtime editor, Sarah Patterson. We're so excited to follow all of your upcoming projects with Digiday.
Our theme music is by Tamar Haviv, and our art is by Celine Chang. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer.
If you like our show, please, please, please rate us 5 stars and leave a review. And more importantly, tell all of your friends who used to listen to us as Here to Make Friends. Help us get the word out about our new name. It really, really helps us.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com with your questions and voice memos. We might even feature you in an upcoming mailbag.
You can also find us on Twitter at @LoveToSeeItPod and on Instagram at @ClaireandEmmaPod. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @EmmaLadyRose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon. We'll be back next week for week 7 of Katie's Journey to Find Love. Can you
Stitcher.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.